So the time has come. Welcome to another episode of Black Wealth Connect. We have a financial advisor and we're going to cover a lot today because there is a big myth out there and people wonder, why do they need a financial advisor and why can a financial advisor or how can a financial advisor be able to bring benefit to somebody's financial structure and how it is moving forward, especially for the youth?
Yeah.
You know, it's catered a lot to the youth and how they're able to put in the right steps in order for them to be financially free at the end. So It's a very exciting episode. I have one of my brothers here, which I've known for a very long time. And we're going to get into how we met because it's, you know, I still don't remember, but apparently he does. Without any further ado, I want to introduce my brother, Ike. How are you today?
I'm not too bad. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Oh, anytime, man. You know, we've had a lot of conversations about like this episode and I think there's so much for a lot of people to learn out there. And even just for the stuff that I've learned from yourself, just having a lot of conversations has been very inspirational. So I hope that we can translate that to the audience today. So really look forward to this episode. Now, how did we meet, man? Because this is this is the big myth, you know. I'm trying to figure out how the hell we met because apparently you said you know, and I completely forget. So how did we meet?
It's weird because a lot of the people I've known for quite a while now, and I seem to have a lot of core memories. So whether it's yourself or we both know Davis, I actually remember where we often met. I don't know why, but it's one of those memories I sort of hold on to. So we met at the Bankstown Byron, what's his name? Brian Brown Theatre. So where Bankstown Council is, that park, the Paul Keaton Park, we actually met at that theatre when it newly opened.
Okay. And what were they doing at that theatre?
So what we were doing, there was a youth event.
Oh, wow.
And you and Charlie were there.
Yeah.
And we just met on that occasion. You came without Davis.
Yeah.
And Davis was upset that you guys had left him back in Glenwood that time. So that's where we first met.
We
all just hit it off from then.
And it's been history since.
It's been history, That's where we met. So you probably don't remember that, but I remember because I remember we had my mom had just bought me this nice new Nike bucket hat.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was rocking it out. I was feeling myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, bucket hats were in fashion back then. They didn't suit me, so I never wore them, you know, but they did suit a couple other people. So
I wouldn't say it suit me. I just wore it
anyway. For the sake of it. No, that's awesome, man. No, that's good. At least I know how we met. So one thing I also want to just understand about yourself before we dive into a lot of the financial advising you know, topics. And you it was very interesting when we were talking on the phone. Apparently you said that you weren't born in any of the countries that I mentioned. Yeah. I said Australia. Yes. And you're originally from Nigeria. Nigerian background. So where were you born and what was your childhood like?
Okay. So I was born in Israel. So
really?
Yeah. So my father's a scientist. My mom's a nurse, as most Nigerian sort of diaspora. You literally find us anywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere around the world. Yeah.
Literally everywhere. So my father was a scientist and he was studying at the Hebrew University. I think he was on his master's or his PhD at the time.
Okay.
And my parents had all three of us here. So there's myself and my two siblings.
Yeah,
we were born in Israel. And then a little bit after that, we came to Australia.
Damn. So how long, do you know when you guys came to Australia? Because Israel is a very interesting, and how did your parents end up in Israel? That's very weird.
So they offered my father a scholarship.
Oh, wow.
And he was working with some esteemed scientists, I guess, at the time.
Okay.
Because a lot of research was coming out of Israel, still does actually.
Yeah.
I think, that a lot of research still comes out of Israel.
And, yeah.
My dad was keen to actually just work and study there.
So, yeah.
And we were all there initially up until I think I was 4 or 5 years old.
Yep.
And then we came to Australia where he continued research at Sydney University.
So did you guys speak the language? Because that would have been the first language you guys would have spoken when you guys first came out of there.
Yeah, that's a funny anecdote. But we at the time we were struggling to understand. So Israelis, they speak Hebrew.
Yeah.
And in the area that we were in, we had Israeli kids, Palestinian kids, kids from different backgrounds. So what actually happened was, you know, my parents were speaking to us in Igbo, which is my language.
Yeah.
And they were also speaking to us in English. In school, they were speaking to us in Hebrew and they were also speaking to us in Arabic. So the funny thing, I did not speak till I was 5 years old.
Really?
And my parents were very worried because they took us to a speech pathologist.
Yeah.
I said, oh, look, why isn't your children speaking? And back then, I guess the way in which they approach things has changed, right? So now they're like, no, just keep speaking to them in those languages.
Yeah.
Eventually, they'll keep on speaking.
They'll keep on speaking.
Right? But back then, there was like, no, they're too confused. You need to choose one language.
Yeah.
And that's what you'll speak to them. And my parents were like, oh, okay, if they have to choose one, it's English.
Yeah.
Because English was...
It's universal language.
Yeah, it was the most used one at the time. And you know, I speak to my parents about this now and go, they said, look, had they known the new research, obviously, if they had known, they would have continued speaking to me in my my mother tongue.
That's
because then that's important, because you hold on to that.
Yeah.
And then children will always pick up
the
other language. So if you notice, especially with say Lebanese or Greek children, they speak to their parents to you know, if it's Greek people, they speak to their yaya, right, which is their grandma.
Yeah.
In that language.
Yeah.
And then at school they flip. And so they're able to be multilingual very quickly. So the children just have to persist.
But yeah.
Most children at that time, they don't speak till they're maybe 3 or 4 years old often. And that's not uncommon. Even with my son now, it's up until recently, he actually started speaking and then we actually understood him because like the same as myself, my dad was speaking to him in my language. My wife is from a different ethnic group, so they're speaking to them in that language as well as English.
Ah, that's crazy, man. Yeah, no, that's very interesting, man. So you have a very interesting upbringing, man. Like, I would have never guessed that you were born in Israel, but that's, wow, that's, you know, you're probably the first person I know that I was actually born in Israel from an African country, you know?
Oh, okay.
So that's very interesting. In terms of just some of the stuff that you enjoy outside of, your professional work, so you're a big soccer fan. So
huge
soccer fan. So we both support Arsenal. I'll just put that out there. I think that's what connected us a lot too, you know, because we support the Gunners. I mean, and you also used to go to the Wanderers game with me, just here in Parramatta. So, I mean, do you still go to the games? Or
yeah, I still go to the game. I enjoy
playing. Is the crowd still wild?
Nah, man.
They've calmed down a bit?
They've calmed down for sure. Because obviously, you know, success, you know, brings a lot of people that jump on the bandwagon and so on.
Yeah,
it was
fun
back then. But now they're not doing as well. So, but you know, it's because I live in Parramatta, I literally can walk down to the games.
You can walk down to the stadium.
Yeah, so I walk down, you know, when I don't have daddy duties and so on.
And we'll get into that, man. So, and obviously, how's father, like, as you've just mentioned, so how's fatherhood and stuff like that? You're enjoying it?
Yeah, definitely.
Two sons.
Two boys. They keep me busy. They're a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
You know, my parents say that it's payback for what I...
Yeah. But usually the payback is when you're given two girls, you know, just like, you know, that's apparently that's what they say about guys.
That's what they say, but I guess I think it's just more so around just the constant alertness that I have to
you
be
have to
because,
focus and,
because the two of them, they have a lot of energy and they, you know, they bounce off the walls literally. You know, the 2-year-old even more so because I have a 2- and a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
The 2-year-old is a bit crazier than the older one. We thought the other one was crazy, and then the 2-year-old came in.
The 2-year-old came in, it was even more crazy.
This guy's changed.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, but I enjoy the experience, man.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I think when we spoke in, you know, you always did, they always are keeping you busy. I can hear them in the background when you're on the phone. So now that's cool, man. So I want to switch gears a bit. I want to talk. I want to talk about why we're here today, which is all about you know, you being a financial advisor and what it is that you can do to be able to benefit people, or not just yourself, but just financial advisors in general.
Yeah.
What are some of the services they offer and how they can potentially help the youth to become more financially stable or more set for the future? So before we jump straight into that, I just want to ask you, so what got you into finance? Was it just something that you woke up one day, or was it what the African parents, I said this to Jesse on the first episode, how African parents just tell you, you know, they want you to become doctors. They always know what they want for you, but they, you know, they never let you choose what you want for yourself. So what got you into it?
I think I originally wanted to be an engineer.
Civil engineer, planned, like, I mean,
no, petroleum engineering.
Oh, wow.
To be specific, because Nigeria is an oil producing country, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so when I was when I was in high school, towards the end, I was thinking, oh, you know, I'd want to go work in the oil and gas industry in Nigeria. But as time goes on, you know, I got into UTS, I started doing business, then I looked at financial advice, and honestly, I wanted to do finance.
Yeah.
But really? I wanted to do finance initially. And then a little financial advice, I'm like, oh, look, that's it. That makes a bit more sense. And I'm not really cut out for the cutthroat nature of finance as
well.
Financial advice is something that, as the more I read around the subjects, the more I'm like, oh, look, actually, this is pretty interesting.
Okay. So you did your research before you decided to actually get into it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I looked at it from a personal point of view, because the way I looked at it is, you know, if my parents had met someone like me when they first came to Australia, you know, life could have been different for them as well.
That is unbelievable. You know? So, I think the same thing sometimes.
Because
very deep. Yeah,
and because now, even like if the government, you know, if there's change in circumstances, whether it's government legislation, something happens with the markets, or the overall environment, my dad asked me questions, and you know, because my dad and mum, they're both very intelligent people. They'll ask me questions. I'm like, oh, look, this is what's happening, and they're like, oh, okay. You know, and it's funny because you could be really knowledgeable on, say, in science, or, you know, my mom's a nurse, so she understands all of these things back to front.
That's excellent.
But often they don't know what's beyond that.
Yeah, right?
You have these sort of, you have these blinkers on about what you're focusing on.
Yeah.
Right? And then the wider world and how you build yourself up, people often sort of neglect.
Yeah, they
do. Not neglect, but they don't know how to go about it.
100%. You know, no, I definitely agree with you, man. That's very true. But I think the fact that there's just even what you touched on about, like, you know, if you wish your parents had met someone with the inspiration or with the motivation that you did to be able to get into finance, it would make a big difference to their life. Like, I think that's good. And I think we've all kind of learned that. Like, even just like a lot of the people, like we have a lot of mutual friends, and just some of the stuff that we talk about, I think a lot of people are in the same shoes.
Yeah.
And I think our generation is the generation that's going to change a lot of things in order for us to be able to move forward. So now that's very inspirational. I just want to ask you just in terms of like finance itself, did you always know that you wanted to, like, I know you did mention that you wanted to become a financial advisor, but was there anything else in finance that you did do that eventually led you into financial advising, or did you just go straight into finance to become a financial advisor?
So I worked in insurance beforehand. But
insurance. Okay,
that's whilst I was actually studying. So towards the end, I was working and studying full-time, which meant that no one saw me.
Yeah, okay.
There were periods where people was like, Ike, I haven't seen you for a year.
Ike, you've disappeared. Ike, I used to pop up every once in a while too. I'm like, I haven't seen you in a while. See you at the Wonders game 1 year after that. I'll never see you again. So,
you are
quite a mysterious person.
I'm not mysterious. Life is, you know, how do I put it this way? You know, you have to focus on a few things and you can't focus on everything, right?
So, 100%.
From time to time, there were different parts of your life that you have to almost sacrifice, right?
That is spot on.
And then the way I looked at it is, if you, you can't keep everything going.
Yeah. Right?
You have to blow one thing up
to
be able to make sure the rest that you excel or at least complete another section of your life. So,
100%.
Often people are like, oh, look, Ike, man, I haven't seen you for a while. So look, I'm sorry. Even now, I'll be like, look, I'm sorry. I've got kids, I've got work, you know.
Yeah.
If I message someone, it's like, they ask me, well, how are you doing? I'm like, it's work, kids, sleep, routine.
It's work, sleep. I know the way you told me on the phone. But you know what's also good is that, like, some of the stuff that we've talked about over the phone and the things that you've done in your personal life, which I'm heading towards now, is just, you know, Ike, you're very inspiring, because some of these conversations that we've had over the phone around some of the stuff that you've achieved in your personal life, like, even just you talk about sacrifice. Now I understand exactly why you did it. I mean, it's up to you whether or not you want to talk about it on the cast, but just the fact that you've been able to achieve so many things that you've done outside of your professional work is very inspirational. And that's why I put you on this podcast, because I knew that you are somebody that is very, you know, you're very focused on your future. You've been able to, you come from a very beautiful family. And I think just seeing all that is just very motivational, especially even just for someone like myself and the youth, you know, even just for people that are basically trying to progress in life, and just what you've done in your personal life and based on our conversations. So that's why I just wanted to say thank you very much for being on this episode again.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, and it's very exciting to have you on here. So what is the role of a financial advisor, and how can a financial advisor make a positive impact in someone's financial circumstances?
The way in which I see the role of a financial advisor is essentially one where we provide guidance and advice to an individual to achieve their goals, right?
Yeah.
Because generally speaking, when you have a goal in life, often there's a monetary aspect to it. You want to buy your first home.
Yeah.
You want to go on a holiday.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have all these investments. Long term, a lot of people want to have investments that will give them passive income. That's a very big deal to a lot of people at the moment, but often people don't know how to go about that. So the role of the financial advisor is to actually give them the roadmap to get to their goals.
Okay.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then you break it down into specific components of their financial life, whether it's around their cash flow, you know, whether it's the different structures that they can utilize to get to their goals.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the role of the advisor. It's sort of mapping the path for them to achieve their goals. And
okay.
It goes for quite a while because you could talk to somebody, and we're talking about the youth at the moment.
Yeah.
But you could start off with someone that's young and they're slowly building up. They buy their first home.
Yeah.
Then they go, okay, I might want an investment property. All right, let's look at that. Let's understand what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know? But what happens from there? What's your next goal? You keep on planning, and then suddenly you're talking to someone in their 40s or 50s.
Mm.
Now suddenly they're trying to pay, figure out, okay, how am I going to pay for my children's school fees?
Yeah.
Because that's something on my mind at the moment.
So you're just going out your own personal problems. This is like therapy for you.
It's not problems,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It's all these things that people face. It's all these challenges in life that people face.
Yeah.
And we help them sort of navigate their way through and say, okay, look, these are what your options are. This is how you can achieve them. Or do you actually need to reconsider what you're working towards? Because it's not always going to be, you can achieve this, and this. It's like what we spoke about before. There are sacrifices that people often have to make in order to achieve a certain goal.
Yeah.
Your resources are finite.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, you being someone that has that experience, then, you know, that's the role of a financial advisor, basically to put those blocks in place for people in order for them to get to where they need to get to.
That's right.
No, that's awesome. So does this, being a financial advisor, does it also apply for companies, or, you know, whether you're self-employed, or is it just specifically for individuals?
So it is often specifically for individuals. However, we do, our advisors do tie in other structures that an individual could be working with.
Yeah.
So say, for instance, a guy is running his own company, you know, so how does that company relate to his long-term goals? What structures are in place for him to maximize the situation? Right. So it's specifically for the individual, but we take all the structures around him into account to essentially make his situation efficient and assist him to make achieve his goals.
Okay, awesome. So if he's got like companies, and then also he's working like, let's say, PAYG, for example, and he comes, let's say they come to you to seek financial advice.
Mm.
So you would look at their complete circumstances, if they own shares, if they own investment properties, if they have a massive portfolio, you see how everything can kind of be tied in.
That's right.
To be able to get them to the next step.
That's right.
Oh, that's awesome. Right.
So we have a handle, sorry about that, but we have to have a handle on all those circumstances. We need to understand, if we provide you with advice, how does that affect a different section of your life?
Oh, okay.
So by law, actually, we need to consider it.
Yeah.
Right. So
that definitely makes sense. And I think why wouldn't an individual, especially if they want to elevate or move up financially, why wouldn't they provide you with all the information? You know, they would, it's like, I couldn't imagine, and I'm not saying this doesn't happen, but I couldn't imagine somebody like, you know, they have credit cards, they have things, and they're not telling people, because all that can affect your financial future, having credit cards, having debt and all these things, right? So they need to paint you the whole picture. Basically,
we tell them that often,
but some people don't.
Tell you up until you go, well, hang on a second.
Yeah. Hold on a second.
There's something not adding up here. So we need to.
You need to figure it out.
What's happening over here? You know. It's important to have a good understanding of the overall picture.
Yeah, for sure.
Because then you can actually assist them. So, you know, say for instance, the whole debt thing. Often people are, they feel a certain way about it, whether they feel ashamed, and you don't need to feel ashamed about any of your financial circumstances. But you know, sometimes people don't like to. They maybe fear judgment.
Yeah.
I'm not here to judge. We just go, okay, well, what's some of the stumbling blocks, or what are some of the issues that are in your way, so we can help you remove them, so you can achieve your goals,
so you can get to your plan. Yeah, definitely.
If you don't know about it, then how are we supposed to help?
Yeah, exactly. So they basically need to disclose everything. So yeah, as you mentioned, so then that way you can paint a good picture for what their future could potentially look like.
That's right.
Yeah, now awesome. So at what point do you feel like someone actually needs a financial advisor? Like, so let's say, for example, someone has an investment property a couple has an investment property and they both work PAYG and now they own a couple shares. Now they want to double that in like over 4 years.
Wow.
So do you think, I know it's quite a lot. I know it's quite a lot, but do you think that, like, I mean, do you know at what point, because I could imagine at some, in some stages, they might come to you thinking, okay, look, I want to double this in 4 years, but they might not understand that they won't even possibly need a financial advisor at that point to be able to get them to that stage. So do you know when to be able to take somebody on board to give them financial advice or?
Well, there's initial building blocks. Hopefully that actual couple has seen an advisor before then.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So hopefully they've actually seen someone beforehand, because there has to be a strategy, in my view, there has to be some type of process in place. And you need to sort of understand where you're going.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not to say they have to have an advisor, but with regards to that kind of circumstance, let's go back to that couple, right? Mm-hmm. They're PAYG, so let's assume that they're earning a high income.
Yeah. Right?
So what are you doing with regards to your high income to minimize tax? You have the investment property. To what end is that investment property assisting you with your long-term goals? Mm-hmm. Is that to give you extra income in the long term? So you're looking to pay down the debt, or are you looking to use some of that equity to actually purchase your next house? In addition to that, they have these shares. What are the shares there for? How do you hold those shares? Is it held through a trust or a company? Are you the beneficiary of it? There's all these structures coming into play. Yeah.
And trust opens up a whole other game.
Oh, it does. Leave that aside because that's a bit more complex. That's a bit more complex. But what I'm saying is that you've mentioned that thing, you can see in my mind, I'm like already asking all these questions. Why is this here? Why is this here? Why is this here? Why, you know, what was your intention? Why did you actually go through that and actually purchase your investment property or buy your shares?
Yeah, you know, definitely.
You know, to what end, is that going to? Yeah. So hopefully before they get to that point, they've actually spoken to an advisor. Because the advisor will help them tie, going back to what you said before, tie that all back into what they're looking to achieve.
Definitely. Got you.
And they could also say, hey, look, there might be some warning signs ahead. Mm. Right. So let's say, for instance, that couple, they have the investment property, interest rates are going up.
Yeah.
Right. So that means that the cost of servicing the investment loan is going to be higher.
Yeah.
Are they going to run into some problems with their cash flow in the long term? So those are the kind of questions.
So there's certain things that you have to kind of pick up eventually.
Yeah. So if they had spoken to an advisor beforehand, they might have actually been able to give them the projections and say, okay, we can stress test that.
Yeah.
Right. So let's assume that your interest rate that you're paying, you know, on that investment loan, let's increase that by 2% and see whether you guys can actually afford that.
Because especially with the interest rates going up at the moment, you know, that is actually something that can potentially happen for that couple.
That's right.
And then they might be put in a situation where they might not be able to sustain or handle everything in the future, which is very cool. So I want to just ask you, so one might assume, or, you know, a lot of people do assume, or people that I speak to within the financial space, they always say, oh, you know, why do you need a financial advisor? Why do you need a financial advisor? So, because they're like, oh, you know, I can manage my own money. I can manage this. So can you just break it down to like why a financial advisor might be able to help people in the future? Like, I know you've explained a lot of things, but that myth about why people assume that they won't need a financial advisor, like, what do you have to say to those people?
You see, that's a question that often I even get asked in a meeting.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And there are individuals that can manage their circumstances on their own. You know, say for instance, I come across a lot of engineers that can give me a spreadsheet based on their modeling, and they love it. I had that on Friday. The individual said to me, he's like, oh, I've just worked this out, and I don't understand why my numbers are not making sense with your numbers.
Yeah.
I've just gone, look, it's you've missed this, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, okay. But that's the reason why you need an advisor, because often a person or a client will come up to you sometimes for validation. Sometimes they'll give you, they'll come to you for guidance.
Yeah, you didn't mention that before. Yeah, it's almost like they just want to confirm what they're doing is actually working potentially working.
That's right. So an advisor is there, one, to confirm or assist you with achieving your goals.
Got you.
Right? If you're working on a particular objective, they can give you a different point of view.
Mm.
Right, and say, by the way, you were thinking of doing this.
Yeah.
Did you consider this?
Yeah.
Right? And they can then provide the two scenarios back to you and go, okay, well, you know what? This is better. Or what you're doing was great, right? But this is the other option. This is the other alternative.
Yeah.
And then maybe this is cheaper, but this won't get you there faster. All this. So the reason why someone will go to an advisor is one, to, like I said before, to guide them, but also give them a different opinion, a different view.
Yeah, different perspective.
And they're actually now, with regards to legislation, they're actually protected, because now you're having someone that has had to prove why they're giving you a recommendation.
Actually.
So if they're telling you to do something, there has to be a reason behind it.
Behind it, yeah, definitely. That because makes sense.
We get audited, right? So if I give you advice,
yeah.
If an advisor gives you a document that says, this is what we recommend you do, that document actually states the reasoning behind it and what the other sort of considerations he had.
That's crazy.
Often there's other strategies that he's considered and say he's discarded.
Was that always something? Was that always something that they did before, or was this something new? Like in terms of the actual document, to make sure
that the document is a lot more robust these days.
Oh, robust. Okay, sorry,
The documents are huge.
Yeah,
but to an extent now, the documents are very legal.
Okay.
But they, if a person goes through it word for word, which individuals do,
yeah,
they will literally see the reasoning and the thought process that the advisor has gone through,
yeah,
in order to give someone a recommendation.
Damn, that's crazy. So what is it like? Because obviously with the financial advisor, I can tell that there's a lot that goes into it, a lot of thinking, to be honest with you, because, you know, to be able to strategize or to put together a plan for somebody's life in terms of where they're going financially, it involves a lot of, you know, doing research and trying to understand the market, where things are going to. So what does the day-to-day look like for a financial advisor? Like, do you go into the office and do what? I mean, is it just, what is it? Just, are you just on spreadsheets 24/7? What does it look like?
We can't be on spreadsheets 24/7, yeah, because we need to see.
Well, no, I know you don't work 24/7.
Yeah, no, what I mean, we're not just behind the desk, because we still need to talk to people.
Okay.
Right?
So it's a lot of face-to-face interaction.
There's a lot of face-to-face, okay, right? Yeah. So a large component of the day is actually actually taken up by you speaking with your clients or your members, depending on what organization you work for.
Yeah.
Speaking to clients, speaking to members, and going, trying to understand their circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
And then your day is then bookended by, one, getting back to people you've already spoken to.
Yeah.
You're also trying to figure out the administration and compliance that comes with advice. So you are, each and every single discussion you have with someone is documented.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to, depending on what type of discussion you have to document it to the nth degree.
Wow.
So you still have to do that.
Cool.
You also need to spend some time going through continuous professional development. So
it's non-stop.
It's definitely non-stop. Yeah. There's no each and every single day is different.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just come in and go, okay, today. Obviously, you schedule and you definitely plan your days. Like, say, for instance, tomorrow I already know where my meetings are.
You're already doing stuff here. You're already planning.
You're already planning. So there's no standard day, right? You just need to be organized to know what your week looks like, what your priorities are.
Yeah.
First and foremost is just ensuring that you're getting back to your clients.
Even just on that too, like, especially within finance, you always do need to basically prepare yourself on a Sunday. I've noticed that even in my personal role, if you don't set yourself up on a Sunday, then almost your Monday is going to be so compact. So just on that, like, just moving forward, I just want to ask you, to become a financial advisor, like, what are the requirements to do that? Because for the youth and people that are coming out of high school, for example, that potentially want to go down that path, like, what are the steps to be able to do that role?
Right. Okay. So in the past, it was the RG146. So it was a diploma, but now I know that you now need a degree.
Yeah.
That is financial planning or financial advice related. Not related, specific, actually.
Okay.
So in the past, it was related. So you could be an accountant, then complete the RG146 in the past, but now they need a degree in financial planning.
Yeah.
And then once you complete the degree and there's a certain amount of subjects that you need to complete and tick off to be certified or to be an advisor, you then need to now go through a professional year. So you now need to be sort of monitored and supervised for a whole year by an advisor that is experienced in order to actually become an advisor. So the process is
quite lengthy.
It's now lengthy. Yeah. Because it's, if you're looking at that, so if you're looking at a normal 3-year degree plus one professional year, looking at least 4 years before you can be an advisor, in terms of the new, in the past, it wasn't the case, but obviously,
now it's come to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a profession. So the standards need to be higher.
So one thing I want to ask too is as you know, within finance, it's very broad. Yeah. So in terms of like financial advisors being able to give advice within specific markets, like let's say, for example, from what I know, there's a lot of financial advisors that specialize in superannuation, retirement, how you're going to set up your future. There's so many elements to financial advice, to being a financial advisor. What I wanted to ask you specifically is like, do you need a qualification to be able to give financial advice within different roles?
Yes.
How does that actually work? Because I'm assuming that, you know, you could be a financial advisor that specializes in retirement, but you can't give advice about shares and stocks and all that. So like, what are the steps in order for you to be able to give advice out in different sectors?
The different sectors are ones that often have more legislative or more complex needs. Around investments or shares and so on, often a large amount of advisors can provide advice in that space.
Okay, gotcha.
Because that's traditionally what advisors were strong in.
Okay.
But now you have advisors that, say, for instance, specialize in aged care.
Oh, really? Aged care now?
Aged care is huge. Aged care is huge because from the last census, even the one released last week or two, the largest demographic or largest age demographic in Australia is the boomers, followed by us now, millennials, right? But the boomers have always been a core component of the Australian population, and a lot of them are now getting older.
Yeah.
And they need guidance to go into aged care because the costs around aged care are huge. Large. You're looking at anywhere minimum from about 200,000, 300,000 trying to get an older individual into an aged care facility.
That is unbelievable.
So, and there is a lot of legislation around that.
Yeah.
So often individuals need to be experienced, or they really should be experienced in giving advice around aged care. So you do get advisors that specialize in aged care, or you get advisors that specialize in high net worth individuals. So high net worth individuals, people with a lot of money.
Yeah, with a lot of wealth.
$2 million plus, that focus, say, on high net worth space. So they might not even know anything to do with, they might not even understand Centrelink or age pension, because most of their clients don't even operate in that space.
That's very interesting.
Right? Because the strategies, structures that are applicable to people in high net worth spaces might not be immediately available to people that are, say, for instance, not in high net worth, your moms and dads and so on. So you do get advisors that specialize.
Yeah.
However, whether it's around self-managed super funds and SMSFs or aged care, that's where you start to get specializations, because those areas are actually quite complex.
Yeah, they're complex. And they're not like your average, the standard, you know, just shares and things like that, which are...
There's no requirement. I think there are now requirements for aged care. There really should be a requirement that you understand legislation. Same with self-managed super fund and most licensees. So the companies or the structures that employ financial advisors now require for anyone giving advice around, say, aged care or self-managed super funds to be adequately qualified. So they won't just go, okay, you've got your degree. Then they want to then see you've done extra study. So say, for instance, when I moved to a previous licensee, I had completed my certifications around self-managed super funds.
Yeah.
They looked at it and go, oh, it was a little while ago. Do it again.
Really? So you had to go through the whole process again?
Yeah, go back and do it again. And then it's like, then I was looking at aged care and I was like, well, that's...
Yeah, that's a whole nother...
That's a whole nother ball game. But obviously, as time goes on, you continuously have to improve yourself and ensure that you are...
It's like keeping your tools sharp.
Oh,
you always have to make sure, especially keeping up to the market, it's not always as straightforward as possible.
Mm.
One thing I also wanted to ask you is that... there's so many financial advisors in Australia. Like, I've actually done my research. There's around 17,000, and for one that is seeking to potentially go down that path of getting a financial advisor. So How does one know that they're dealing with a financial advisor that is actually able to do a good job for them? Because there's so many out there, right? You could Google, and I've spoken to Jesse about this too, like looking for brokers, looking for financial advisors, looking for anybody that is able to get you from A to B, right? Yeah. Financially. How does one know that they're dealing with a good financial advisor? And is there any websites they're able to go to see whether or not these people are actually qualified as they say they are?
Yeah. So all advisors, if you're providing advice under a license, you need to be registered on the ATSIC register, right? Yeah. So the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, right? And they're the ones that monitor where advisors move from place to place. Mm-hmm. So anyone that's currently registered essentially means they are they're licensed to provide advice. Right. So that's the first reason. So if you engage with an advisor, you can quickly, if you Google my name,
yeah,
it actually comes up. It says where I've been, if I've had any issues, blah, 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 blah. Right. Yeah. Because everything people, you spoke about it before, people give you their livelihoods.
Yeah, they definitely do. Yeah. Yeah.
You need to be, appropriately qualified to deal with that. If not, a lot of things in the past had gone wrong. So now there's a lot of measures in place. So there's not just that. So going through ATSIC to check if someone is registered. There's also going through professional bodies, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of advisors are also registered with a professional body, whether it's a financial planners association.
That's so interesting.
The IFA, Independent Financial Advisors Association, and so on. So there's a lot of professional bodies as well. So if a person is not just registered with ATSIC, but then also with a professional body, they don't just agree to abide by the rules as per ATSIC, because there are broad rules by ATSIC, but then each professional body also has their own set of sort of rules that they need to abide by.
That is great.
So by signing up with them, you're now saying, okay, yeah, I'm going to follow those rules as well.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. Because I guess like you say, like, you know, everything's kind of like, in order for you to be able to be on top of everything, there's a lot that goes into being a financial advisor. Like even just listening to some of the stuff that you're saying, I'm like, God, this is very overwhelming. Like if I was to consider being a financial advisor, which I would go down the path of being it, but just you telling us the right steps and everything that goes into it is, it's definitely mind blowing, you know, it's really good. So can I ask, being a financial planner from when you started up until right now, like, has there been a lot of things that have changed? Like, has the technology changed over time? Is it easier to be a financial advisor now? Because you've been doing the role for how long?
I've been an advisor for over 10 years now.
So over 10 years. So when you first started from day one up until now, like, so what has changed? Like, is it easier? Is it harder?
It's a lot harder in terms of...
Harder?
Yeah. It's not easier. No, it's harder because... Yeah. The requirements to be able to provide advice now has been sort of increased up, ratcheted up in terms of the compliance. Compliance is a big part. A lot of individuals are not happy with compliance just because, unfortunately, due to things in the past, there's now a little bit of people believe overreach in terms of legislation. The educational requirements are also increased, as I mentioned before, because in the past it was a diploma, now it's a degree plus years of experience.
Years of experience, yeah.
So it's harder in a good way because now people that have left being, because you mentioned 17,000, it used to be 25,000 plus.
It used to be?
Yeah, in terms of the amount of advisors.
In Australia?
Yeah, in Australia.
So it's gone backward?
Yeah. Yeah, because the requirements are so much more higher. Mm-hmm. And in order to be an advisor in at this point in time, you have to really enjoy being an advisor.
Okay.
If not, the entire environment is actually quite difficult to continue doing the work because there's a lot of requirements. You know, mm-hmm. I spoke about the need to note down every discussion, which is fine.
Yeah.
But you need to spend time not just recording your discussions, really explaining your reason behind giving advice, then meeting your members, ensuring that your continuous education is up to date. There's a lot that goes into it.
There's a lot that goes into it.
And there's a lot of individuals gone, look, you know, this is a bit much at the moment. So they move to a different field.
Did COVID change? Like how was COVID for being a financial, like being a financial advisor? Was it because as you've mentioned before, a lot of face-to-face interaction is required to be a financial advisor. So being that you couldn't go face-to-face with people and everything was via Zoom, was it easier, you reckon, to manage it? Or was it like,
I was easier in that. I actually had more appointments.
You had more appointments because it's probably easy. People can do it in their pajamas. They don't have to come to you.
It was actually interesting. Yeah, because you had
a button on, but you were wearing shorts. People didn't even know.
I didn't have a button on. Towards the end, I would be seeing people, and yeah. I would be in a. I'd be some licensees encourage a button on. Towards the end of COVID, I did not put button ons. The clients that I was comfortable with, they were wearing trackies. I was maybe wearing a jumper. And we were having discussions. It was a lot more intimate because they're now seeing you beyond your corporate look.
Gotcha.
So you're now a human being.
Yeah, which I think they appreciate. You know, they don't always want to see you in a suit and tie. Like, they want to even know, like, because I feel like it's about building a relationship with the person that you're dealing with, and they want to feel comfortable.
Mm.
So yeah, now that's awesome, man. Yeah, because in the finance space, COVID changed so much. You know, people were doing things so much, even within my role too. Like, I never...
Working from home.
Yeah, working from home. And I think a lot of financial institutions realize that you actually don't even need to be in the office, you know? Like, we were getting up in the morning, cold nights, putting on our... Like, what for, you know? When we literally could have just got out of bed and just switched on the computer and started working.
Especially if you're not in a client-facing role.
Exactly.
Because if you think about it, like, if I didn't have to be in the office today...
Thank you.
Why are you in the office today?
Why in the office?
So... It then asks, you know, you've already been given all these tools, yeah. Right? Because if you remember back in the day, I used to cart my trolley.
Oh, God. You look like you were Superman. You were about to go to one of the booths and change it to a hole. Yeah.
So you're lugging all this equipment around. Yeah. And we always did, right? So,
but I can ask you something. Could you have not put everything that was in that wheelie thing inside your?
No. So what we actually had was in that bag.
Yeah, please tell me what you had in that bag because you looked sharp. But what the hell was in that bag?
So what you're talking about is when I was training and when you first saw me as an advisor 10 years ago. So that was what did I have in my bag at that time? I had all the training documents back in the day. Paper was still very. You know, it's only up until recently that people realize that paper's not really needed.
It's not really.
Right. So we had all our training material there.
Yeah.
We had our laptop, all the equipment for your laptop.
Gotcha.
And then in addition to that, what do I have in there? So I also have my gym equipment in there as well. So, you know, if you saw me, I used to get to work maybe 7 o'clock in the morning, work training started at 8:30. So if I get in there at 7, I can train for an hour.
Gotcha.
Change, have breakfast, and then go in. So that's you would literally see my whole life.
Your whole life in the wind.
I was lugging everything around. I still carry a big bag every single day because it has.
But not like that wheelie one.
It's just as big. But I just now carry a duffel bag because.
Things have changed. Yeah. I guess not
changed really because I still have my laptop. I still have all my gear, but at the same time, of my gym equipment because of what I do is if I go into the office.
Yeah.
I try and get my gym, I try and train during my lunchtime. So at least when I get home, I'm fully present. I'm not worried about.
Especially with the kids too, you know, exactly. You're able to balance. Okay, awesome. Yeah. Now what I want to do is I want to talk about how financial planners or financial advisors get paid because I think a lot of people don't understand. The way I see it is that with financial advisors, they do a lot. They could either do a lot short term or they could do a lot long term. So how does the payment structure work for people that want to just use a financial advisor for a short period of time versus someone that actually wants to use it for a long period of time? How does that work?
Okay. So with regards to how people pay for advice at the moment, a lot of the models are now moving towards fee for service, right? So based on what type of service you're engaging your financial advisor with,
yep.
You will pay... something that reflects the amount of work that they put in. So it could be simple advice where you're dealing with cash flow management or they put in, say, for instance, your insurance is in place, right? So they'll charge you a set fee based on the complexity there. As things become more complex, obviously the fee then becomes larger. So on average, your fees are looking at anywhere from $2,200 to above $7,000, depending on how complex it is, right? Then on an ongoing basis, it then depends on how you engage with that advisor. Do you want to deal with them sporadically? So in the episodic advice, so they set you up now, right? And then 2 or 3 years down the track, you come back and go, okay, this has now changed. And then they charge you based on what that complexity is. Or you can have an advisor each and every single year. They're required to actually say, this is the fee we're going to charge you. And this is a service we're going to provide, right? So it's entirely, all of this is entirely up to the client, really. You know, how do you want to engage with the advisor? what do you want them to focus on, right? And then they will then tell you, okay, this is what the fee looks like, right? However, where people limit what the advisor can look at, some advisors will be like, look, that's way too limited and we need to consider other things. And if that individual does not want the advisor to look at that, some advisors will be like, look, you know what, you might need to go speak to a different advisor because we need to take a little bit more into account.
Okay.
So it's really dependent on.
It depends on the, so it could change at any given time, depending on what they want. Okay. What does it look like when a person wants a financial advisor for the first time? Like what's the initial conversations like? So how does that start? So if I like, just say, for example, and sorry to cut you off, for example, like I'm somebody that is seeking financial advice now. I kind of feel like, okay, I have two investment properties. Now I want to double that over a certain period of time and I have this plan. So once I reach out to a financial advisor,
yeah,
what's the initial first step look like?
So the initial discussion is just that. It's an initial discussion where the advisor will understand that individual's circumstances. So there will be a lot of questions, a lot of tell me a little about this, tell me about that. So they're understanding your goals, they're understanding your financial position. And then looking at, okay, what are the next steps?
Yeah.
All right. So that's always the first discussion. They understand your current circumstances, look at what your goals are. And from there, they will then tell you, okay, look, this is what dealing with that advisor looks like, right? It's at that point in time, once they understand your current situation, will they tell you, okay, this is what the fee looks like. This is what we intend to do. And this is how we believe it will benefit you.
Okay. And can I also ask with that, like, because down the track, eventually, if they are happy and they want to seek your services, there's going to get to a point where they're going to have to actually provide documentation, things like that, right? So I want to, this is a two-part question. I want you to talk about what type of documents they might ask you for. And on top of that, how are they protected from actually giving you those documents? Because that's one thing. They might not feel too safe about giving you their whole, you know, their life basically on a piece of paper. So what does that look like?
Yeah, so it is essentially that. It is their entire life. We want to know your, often some advisors, even before you come in, they will send you across one, what is known as a financial services guide. So that explains who they are, who they work for, how they get paid, and what type of services you can expect from them. In return, if you agree to that, they'll also send across a privacy guide, as well. So that covers the privacy aspect, how they deal with your information.
Yeah.
It's all covered by law, right? So you can't disclose information. An advisor wants to have information, they can't disclose that information.
Gotcha.
Up until the client's written consent.
Yep.
Right. Yep. So, before any information is released, the client will actually know. And in some instances, I've had in the past where they go, someone calls me and it's like, who is this? Right? And they go, oh, they told me to come and ask you for information. I'm like, send that in writing. And even if they send it in writing, I call the client and go, hey, this person's calling me. Who's this person? What do they want?
Gotcha.
And then we go, okay, yeah, here's the information. If not, we go, we can't give you that. We can't give that information. Yeah. It has to be express written authority from the member that the third party can access. It's called a third party authority. So that's for information, just so that people are comfortable with providing an advisor with information. Now, the information that we look for,
the documentation.
Like, so information documentation.
Yeah, document. Yeah.
There's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right. So from one,
I've been breaking it down as simple as
what we can. All right.
So we're asking for bank statements, tax returns, like.
So we ask for your current salary details, so whether it's POI, so your pay slips and so on, three of the most recent pay slips, so we can understand your current cash flow situation. We often, from my point of view, sometimes I used to get the client to complete a spreadsheet. So I would send them across a spreadsheet. They would then tell me about their cash flow, how much money they is coming in, how much money is going out. So I understand the cash flow situation before they come in.
Spending habits too and things like that, yeah? Or not as much?
The spreadsheet would pretty much tell me what the picture would look like there. In the past as well, you would also ask for superannuation statements. If not, we can ask them to sign documents where we can get that information. We also look for Information around any loans, debt that they have, if they look at
undisclosed debt.
Sorry
to cut you off.
From a risk point of view.
There's a lot.
You guys look at that. If they don't disclose information, it's not because here we're not
change your training.
No, not at all. I'm actually explaining why, you know, someone would, if they're not disclosing that to me, is like, look, that's not at my detriment. Yeah. That's at your detriment because the advice I provide you is only limited. The accuracy and the appropriateness of the advice is limited by the information you give me. You
provide, yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, spot on.
And as an advisor can be like, I don't have any information and I can't give this advice. And I've actually had that very recently. Like, you're not giving me any information that I would need to take into account before I give you advice. Mm-hmm. So I can't give you the advice.
Got you.
You know, so we ask for a lot of it. So whether it's, like I said, superannuation information, salary, loan information, it can go even further. Tell me about your estate planning, your wills, your power of attorneys. What do you have in place?
As far as wills.
Yeah, because we give, advisors give advice on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone can be like, mom and dad, you know, we've got a child that's disabled. What kind of finance or what kind of structures can we put in place to protect that child? We go, okay, cool. So you need to go talk to your lawyer about X, Y, and Z. So we ask a lot of info. There is a lot. Literally anything to do with your financial well-being or anything you put money down on, we want to know that.
And see, that's the thing, because a lot of people don't actually know that you guys go into that much detail. Like even for me, as I mentioned, you know, being in finance, I didn't even understand that you guys go to that extent, asking for wills and things like that. I thought it was just more around the fact that you guys set people up financially. But to go to that depth of of information, that's awesome, man. So,
and sorry, to be clear, we don't ask for the will. We ask, is it in place? What's happening there? If not, we provide a recommendation. If there are advisors, and once you're dealing with that high net worth space, that deal with lawyers and go, look into this will, they said they need to do this. Can you make sure that's in place?
Awesome. What I also want to ask you is that once you've set up so let's say, for example, you and the potential client has put something in place, let's say you've put something in place for that client, they're happy, they're willing to proceed, everything's okay. So what does the actual structure look like? Are you sending them a spreadsheet that they need to follow? What are the steps you put in place for them to be able to stay on track?
If it's ongoing advice, most advisors will check in with their clients, it depends on what that client is willing to pay for, because obviously time is money, right? If we say, okay, let's take a step back and they've now signed that they want to take on this advice. The advice I've given you, you want me to put it together.
Yep.
So that's implementation. So the advisors often implement that advice depending on what firm you come across. Some say, here's information. This is how you implement it. Great. So if it's simple enough, but in a lot of situations, it could be complex and advisors know that there's a reason why that client came to you.
Yeah.
So it's not just giving the advice, it's also implementing the advice.
Gotcha.
Right? So, you know, and that could be a separate fee. There'll be an advice fee to say, this is the advice. Then there's a separate fee for implementation, because then there's time and expertise required to actually implement that advice. So they could implement that advice and say, okay, at every single stage, the advisor is like, oh, by the way, I need you to sign this document because it's going to do this part of the advice. Here's the information. All right, your account is now open. Can you just confirm you've logged in to check your investment account?
Yeah.
They can log in. Yep, I've got my view. Fantastic. All right, everything is now fully set up. Mm-hmm. All right, we've now completed the implementation. Then you're asking, okay, what is the ongoing step from there? Like I said, it's dependent on the individual to say, okay, well, how do they want to engage with the advisor? Mm-hmm. You know, so do they want every single month to check that everything is going as per plan, because sometimes advisors provide you with projections.
Yeah.
So if they want to make sure that they're on track.
Yeah.
Right.
Then
they have to let the advisor know, look, we want help to stay on track.
Okay.
Then the advisor will then contact them once every 3 months, once every 6 months, or once a year.
But just
depending on what they want to pay.
When you get to a point where you see that they're potentially not taking on your advice, or you can see that they're not putting in the right places, not putting in the right things to continue on, maintaining what you guys have discussed. At what point do you guys actually stop? Is there a point where you guys pull the plug and basically be like, okay, look, you know, I can see that we've put a plan together, you're not following it. I'm not willing to do this anymore. At what point do you guys usually do that?
Often you can tell from the get-go. I mean,
from the beginning. Okay.
Yeah, from the get-go. Because if someone says, I want advice, and we go, okay, look, we need a bit of information from you. They're comfortable with providing that information.
Yeah.
And then we send them a prompt. It's like, okay, you need that information. They haven't provided it. They turn up to the meeting and they go, I haven't finished. I'm like, well, I can't really help you till you actually give me the information that's needed. You can always tell from the engagement of the actual client whether they're really serious about getting advice and being disciplined about going.
That will be based on your experience, right? Just picking up, like,
you can pick up energies. You can pick up cues.
Yeah, you can pick up things and just determine whether or not people are serious or not about. What's some of the steps they want to put in place? No, that's awesome. So you've mentioned the communication is depending on what the client wants, right? So if they want to be, so after the plan is set, they want you to reach out to them like every couple of months. That's something that they will tell you that they want you to follow, right?
Yeah. So, and obviously, sometimes some individuals don't actually know that. So they say, okay, well, once everything is in place, then they realize actually, this is actually quite complex. You can say, okay, yeah, we can contact you every 6 months or every year. This is what that looks like.
Okay.
Right. And so you can actually prompt that as well. You go, okay, look, this is complex. We would suggest that you speak to us every year. And if they go, no, it's like, not a problem. An advisor, a lot of advisors now will be like, not a problem.
That's awesome. It just also moving forward a bit with the financial, being a financial advisor, like, is there things that you can put in place for people? Like, I'm assuming, like, you won't have all the tools yourself, right? But then let's say, for example, they want to open up, you give them advice about investments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to go ahead and buy investment properties. They want to go ahead and open shares accounts. They want, you know, let's say they're looking on the market, they want to buy as agent. Are you able to provide them people?
Mm.
Are you able to connect them with people that are specialists in that department?
So, you know, the way in which I look at advice as well is we're a conduit, right? We bring a lot of things together and say, okay, we will identify a need and we then tell you who to go talk to, whether it's a mortgage broker to assist with an investment loan, whether it's a lawyer, like I said, to deal with an estate plan, and whether it's a stockbroker, if there's a specific sort of type of share portfolio that needs to be put in place, advisors will have a professional readily available to assist with that. Even accountants, you know, we can say, okay, look, you need to go talk to your accountant. I'll tell your accountant we've done this. All right. Make sure you give them this paperwork. If they need to, tell them to call us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most advisors will work with all the trusted professionals that an individual has to sort of progress their circumstances.
Gotcha. What do you specialize in yourself specifically?
Me.
Like in terms of like a financial
Financial advice at this point in time.
Yeah,
At this point in time, superannuation. So I focus on retirement planning and superannuation strategies for people to grow, because that's the largest area at this point in time.
That's awesome. And when we talk about, because we've had a lot of conversations about the youth, the younger people, how important it is to start off at a very young age in order for you to be able to have a good future have a good future in terms of being able to be financially stable and put all the right things in place. What are some of the things that you could say about the youth that are actually trying to put the right steps in place for them to become financially free? What are some of the things that you could say that they should be focusing on right now?
Oh, it's all quite simple. I often say to people, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a lot of discipline to do with it. But first and foremost, I spoke about cash flow. Cash flow is often the starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how much money you have coming in, more importantly, how much money is coming out, right? Because if you get paid $10 short on a Friday, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you most know. People will know. Yes, most people will know. It's like, hey, look, man, I'm short.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah, not even 10.
Change.
Yeah.
Change and you don't get the right change. You look down, you're like, what the hell is
what's
this
going
shit?
On? You
what's
know?
Going on? Yeah, you're always going to know if you're missing money. Yeah,
but often people don't know how much they're spending.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there's a lot that is happening with people's cash flow that often, I feel a lot of younger individuals, it takes a while to get that discipline up. So, first and foremost, it's the cash flow and understanding how much is coming in, more importantly, how much is going out? And if you have a surplus, what are you doing with that surplus in, you know, cash flow? So surplus is the difference between your income and your expenditure. And if you have a surplus, what are you doing with that surplus? Are you using it to save for your first home? So that's where talking to Jesse might come into play. It's like, you know, how long is that going to take for you to get to your first home and so on? So what are you doing with your cash flow? The second one is debt, just ensuring that they understand what type of debt do you have. Very, very simply, there's two, in my view, two types of debt. There's efficient debt, inefficient debt, right? So inefficient debt, personal loans, credit cards, and the like.
Gotcha.
Where people, it's purchased on items that there's no real benefit.
There's no real benefit to. Yeah, gotcha.
And suddenly, you know, I'm just left with this debt.
With debt, yeah.
And in addition to that, it's often at a high interest rate. Then you have inefficient debt where individuals have, say, an investment loan, where mostly investment loans, where it's, say again, shares or property, right? So with shares, you hope it goes up in value. So if you purchase a share for $5, you hope it goes up to $10. In addition to that, if the company does well, they give you dividends. So you now get an income off those shares, right? The same with property, right? You purchase it for $500,000, you hope it goes up to $600,000, and you get a rental income. In Australia, if you have that type of debt, the interest payments on it can be tax deductible.
Yeah.
So that's why it's efficient. In addition to that, it's against an asset that goes up in value.
It goes up in value. So it's
adding to your financial
goals. To your financial goals,
your well-being, and it's really adding to you, to your portfolio, and you're really growing your wealth. And so those are the first two parts that I tell individuals, like, really review that. Most younger individuals won't have an investment property or this or that. So if you're having some type of debt, you know, and it's non-deductible, it's not really doing anything for you, try and review that and talk to whoever provided you with the debt to try and get rid of it as soon as possible. And obviously this is general advice. So it doesn't take anyone's circumstances into account, but this general advice. So, but it is saying, okay, look, generally, that's what people need to consider. You know, is this really adding to my circumstances? So, for young individuals, that's the cornerstone, the cash flow, the debt, and then understanding what your goals are. Mm-hmm. Right? You break it down into the short term, medium, long term. So, in the next 2 years, what do you want to achieve?
Gotcha.
Right? Then 2 to 5 years, that's medium term. What else is there? You know, and then long term, where are you heading towards? Like, what is it that you're trying to do? What is your long term goal? People talk about passive income. I've spoken to a lot of people about passive income. And that's just having all these other revenue streams.
And also having stuff like consistency, right? Like, you need to have consistency, like, because that's one thing that we talked about a lot, like being consistent, being driven, make sure that you're really focused on what you're trying to achieve, and make sure you're putting in the right places, the right things in place for you to be able to achieve those
definitely
things.
The right building blocks.
Yeah, the right building blocks. Now, that's awesome, man, because, it's very inspirational just having a lot of conversations with you over the phone and trying to understand exactly what it is that you do. And it's been a very good episode, man, just being able to talk about a lot of the stuff that you do. And we did agree that when we sit together, that we're going to make sure that it's catered a lot to the youth, you know, because this is, as we mentioned, it's the next generation. There's so many things happening in this world, you know, Afterpay and all these things. People don't understand the impact of all these things after a while. And you financially, there's just so many things changing all the time. So, so I just want to say thank you very much for being on the podcast, Ike. I think it's been amazing to have your input. And I always say to you, man, you're very inspirational. But I'm not going to let you off the hook yet, because I do have 3 questions I need to ask you before we wrap this up.
Go for it.
These are more personal questions in terms of some of the stuff that you possibly wish that you could have done different at a younger age. So I'll start it off by saying, if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self 3 pieces of advice about finance, what would they be? You can actually say one if you want to, because sometimes it's different.
No, three is fine.
Yeah, what advice would you have given yourself?
What would I have given myself? One is really make sure you understand your cash flow, right?
Gotcha, yeah.
Because I've always worked, even from when I was 15, right?
Well, you've been a hustler for a long time.
And then life. No, I started off as a paper boy. Back in the day when people bought newspapers on a Sunday,
okay.
I'd wake up on a Sunday and I'd go sell papers.
Yeah, my parents used to make me do that too.
Yeah. No, it's good because I that one was good because it really showed me how to save. So I was able to, by the end of it, as a 16-year-old or 15-year-old, I had a surround sound system in my room with egg boxes, 10 games, this and
you aren't like the average kid, huh? You,
I'll always, no, because you wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and, you know, the only preference was because my parents were religious, are religious. They're like, you have to go to church. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'll go to church 5 o'clock on a Saturday so I can wake up 7 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And then I'll go sell papers for like 3-4 hours.
Wow.
And then I would make, and
you'll make bank, yeah.
Now I make bank because often people just give me, you know, if the paper costs $4, they'll give me $5, like keep the change. I'm like, all right, no worries. By the time you sell, you know, you sell all these papers, stuff you've made, you had a fair bit of tip, and you're good for the week.
Your sibling used to ask you, how you saving, buying all these
things? Yeah, my dad actually asked. He's like, dude, where did all these things come from?
So what would be the other tip?
So the other was like watching my cash flow. I remember my uncle said to me, cut your coat to your size.
Okay.
Right. So what that means is, that's into Nigerian.
You guys live off life quotes, man. Seriously. Yeah.
Hey, they don't only talk to you in parables, man.
In parables.
And then from time to time, it's like, what the hell does that mean? And what that means is that you have to be realistic about, one, what you have, and two, what you're working towards,
that's powerful,
right?
Yeah, that's powerful.
So, you know, if you're going to go buy your first car and you have a certain amount of cash flow, do you really need to go buy that Merc, or can you just buy a secondhand car that will get you from A to B initially? You know, so just knowing what one, you know, knowing your means, your limits initially, it's not to limit your goals or your desire. It's just to ensure that you don't put yourself into a situation where
you set yourself up to fail. Yeah,
exactly. So you know, suddenly you're finding yourself sort of working backwards, and very quickly you're taking on racking up debt.
Gotcha.
As a young age, you know, just because now you're working, but you're paying off this car, and now you're going to have to go get a credit card to, you know, and that's going back to the third part, which is really watch what financial obligations, contracts you get into at a very young age. You spoke about Afterpay, so just understanding what that means for yourself. I mean, some of these things report you to credit, so you have to be very careful about these.
How
they affect your financial well-being.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of very there's a lot of tools now that make things very accessible to people.
Very quickly, you know? Especially the youth. The youth have been set up kind of to fail.
It's
you go in, you can't buy a coat, Afterpay. Three payments of a four.
And this is not to say that is bad.
I
have no opinion on those stuff. But what I'm saying is, just be careful what you're getting yourself into, and just try and take a step. I know as a young person, I definitely did.
I did. Oh, trust me. Yeah.
You know, as a young 21-year-old, I was, you know, you know, I love to have a good time from time to time. You know, whilst people didn't see me time at times, but when I did go out, I really made sure I made the most of it.
Impact, yeah.
But, really watch what arrangements you get yourself into.
Yeah. Right. And so read the fine print. Read the fine print.
If you don't, just get them to explain that to you, because if they don't explain that to you in the right way, you can actually get them on there and go, look, I did not fully understand what I was getting into. Right? That is something that can protect people as well. So just understand those three things.
What's one of your biggest financial failures, and what did you learn from that experience?
Mm.
So just one thing that you could have bought, like, oh, trust me, I have 1,000.
There is a lot of things.
I'm looking at this and I'm like, one is not even. So what's one of your biggest, let's put it that way.
It's like, and the car thing was one that I was saying from personal experience.
Yeah, me too.
Because when I was 21, I went and bought this nice Holden Astra SRI. That was my first car. And it looked nice. Trust me, man. I got a lot of input.
Oh, trust me. The SRIs, those letters at the end,
they look good, man.
The extra dashboards, more shiny things, are more complex.
It looked good. But at the same time, it limited my cash flow.
Gotcha.
And I could have used my cash flow a lot better back then. If I had gone because I did enjoy that time in the car. I drove the car for a long time.
Yeah.
From time to time, it helped my parents. I was able to drive them around as well. But could I have done it better? Yes.
Definitely. Okay. Yeah. So you could have went for, instead of the RSI or whatever, the couple of names, you could have just bought a normal Holden Astra, right?
Yeah, I could have even gone easier. I could have gone
just the like XL or something more
adequate. Yeah. You know, adequate, no one cares about that. Yeah. You know, only guys care about that.
Definitely. And to wrap it up, who has been your most important professional mentor in finance and why?
I've had a few actually till today. Pretty much anyone I've worked with, even when I was I worked at Freedom Furniture as a store person at uni. I still have my manager.
Yeah.
I've always worked hard.
Yeah.
Not hard, but I've always worked.
Yeah.
Even my first manager, I can still message him and he'll respond.
That's awesome. I think so. The best relationships.
I try and maintain relationships as much as possible.
Yeah.
Over the long term. So at every single point in time, those managers have assisted me.
That's awesome. And
even obtaining new roles or whatever. Mm. If I ask one of my managers, the most recent ones or whoever,
they'll still be able to guide you.
Yeah, they'll still be able to guide me.
That's awesome.
You know, so there's a few individuals that have actually helped me. Because I always, you know, I speak to my dad or my mom about this, and I say to them, they say to me, look, no man is an island.
Yeah.
Going back to our parables. No man is an island, right?
Imagine.
So he's like, what they're saying to me is always seek counsel, always ask for advice, for help, for guidance.
Gotcha.
Because you always need someone to show you the way, even if you think you know the way.
Definitely. Now, that's awesome, man. Oh, Ike, this has been a very amazing episode to sit down with you. And these viewers are going to, you know, they're going to pick up a lot from this episode.
The listeners too.
Yeah, listeners, the viewers, everybody's going to pick up a lot from this episode because, like I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show, you know, there's always been this myth around what financial advisors do, what can they provide. Even myself, as I mentioned to you, it was always like, I got, you know, if I have money, why does somebody else need to manage my money? Why does somebody else need to help me with that stuff? And just hearing from yourself about what things financial advisors can implement, especially for young people that are trying to progress in life, then definitely they can learn a lot from this episode. So I really want to say thank you. I'm humbled for you being on the show.
I appreciate
and giving us and giving me your time, you know, today. And yeah, I'm really appreciative. So I want to say thank you. Is there anything that you want to say to wrap it up?
No, I really appreciate it. And I'm thankful for actually being on this platform. It's something that I am actually very passionate about. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. There are a lot of other sort of topics we can cover in the future. So I hope to be back on.
You will definitely. Don't worry, we're gonna,
there are other things that we can definitely delve into and give a bit more time. And a big shout out to my friend Andrew that has done the cover photo for this episode.
And we said with his business
T-Rex Productions.
We're definitely going to plug that because I looked at your photos. He does a very amazing job. He made you look like from Ike to Tyson Beckford.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, but you know what I mean. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
You got to make someone feel good, man. Thank you.